everything is an opportunity. I was reminded of this week when I had an automation failure on my daily email list. Something I'd written. Well, let me back up a minute. I had heard this podcast that was about raising children, and some of the stories were about impactful teachers. I remembered my own impactful teacher story and wrote that up as a daily email, and then thought, you know, this would be great to send on National Teachers Day, which is, I think, May 7th. May 7th of 2018 has already passed, so I scheduled a blog post for May 7th of 2019. And somewhere along the line, the software I used to automate some of my publication decided that I didn't have a blog post during a window when I normally do, which would have been Monday of this week. And so it moved that scheduled blog post from 2019 to Monday and published it. So, you know, it was a thing. And I don't know, I think people new to email marketing would be kind of mortified that that had happened. They would be like, oh my gosh, how embarrassing. Can't believe that happened. I'm just so sorry that I screwed that up, and how embarrassing, and blah, blah, blah. Everything is an opportunity. And this reminds me of that. So what I did with that is said, well, this is an opportunity, and it's an opportunity to share how I do my email automation now and this new workflow that I'm experimenting with. So Tuesday's email was that. It was me saying, hey, haha, this thing happened. And oh, by the way, here's why it happened. And actually, let me kind of pull back the curtain and show you how I'm doing things now. And I got a lot of positive responses to that pulling back the curtain email. So that reminded me that there's an important mindset that maybe doesn't happen automatically. Maybe you have to cultivate it, or maybe it does happen automatically. I'm really not sure. Here's why I'm not sure. When you commit to publishing daily, and again, just to clarify, daily could be 5 days a week, could be 7 days a week, could be more than that, could be as little as three times a week. I feel like that's a threshold, at least in my mind, that represents someone showing up almost every day, if they're showing up 3 days a week in my inbox or in some sort of place where I, you know, I direct my attention. So if that's happening, to me, that's the lower threshold. But let's just, you know, assume you're going to be publishing 5 or 7 days a week. If you're publishing that much, you're applying a real pressure to yourself. And that pressure makes you, this is why I'm not sure if it's an intentionally cultivated mindset, this everything is an opportunity mindset, or if it's something that just happens as a byproduct. Because that pressure makes, I think, most of us become rather opportunistic in looking at our lives and saying, huh, maybe I could talk about this in an email that I'm going to be writing. You'll notice I do that on my list. I use personal stories quite a bit. And I'll explain why in a little bit. But, you know, publishing daily, again, creates this pressure. And it might be that pressure that makes us rather opportunistic, meaning it makes us look proactively and eagerly for opportunities to use the raw material that life gives us to do something valuable for our audience. And again, in a moment, I'll talk about some of the ways that you can create value. But I think that might be part of why I view everything as an opportunity, is because there'll be an opportunity to write about it and pull some lesson out of it or use it in a way that serves my audience. So when I say everything is an opportunity, I really mean everything is an opportunity to add value for your audience. That the, whoever it is you're publishing for, even if you don't actually have an audience, but you're publishing for the audience you would like to have, or the audience you would imagine would be attracted to what you're saying. It's an opportunity. Everything is an opportunity to add value for them. So value takes many forms, I believe. I think what we are aspiring to as consultants, as self-made experts, is to deliver insight, to help people who are ready to hear it anyway, hear and see things in a new way, a deeper way, a more useful way, a way that contributes to their business or their life. So that would be insight. That's one of the forms value can take, but it's not the only form. And, you know, a lot of this, you're going to learn for yourself through doing. So you don't have to take my word for it, but I want to sketch out some other ways that value exists. Could be showing how something is done. So we could think of that as instruction. You know, instruction has value, or education or teaching. You know, here's how you do this. That is for sure a form of value. We can point to examples that allow or help our audience see things in a new way, or create new associations, or basically helps them learn by example. Entertainment has value. And this, I know for a lot of folks, gets out of their comfort zone because they have an idea about business marketing and business communication that is, I think, a little bit restrictive. So I think having and using a sense of humor in your communication with everybody, not only just prospects, but also clients, can be, in a lot of situations, an incredible value add. You know, at least here in America, our culture values entertainment so highly. And I'm not even going to try to figure out or have a theory about why. It doesn't really matter. It's a fact. Entertainment is valued. And I think if you can combine entertainment with something else that has value to your audience, I think it's a very potent, powerful combination. It's a real art form. But, you know, some of the better business speakers really work on making their talks on stage this nice blend of entertainment and, you know, more conventional forms of value. They do that because, well, again, there's lots of potential theories here, but you know, we're in such an information dense, information rich. Well, not all of it is signal. A lot of it is noise, but all of it's information. We're in a very information dense environment. Most of us, all the time. How do you stand out in that kind of environment? Well, you know, having a distinct point of view really helps. Having, you know, reliably interesting, reliably valuable insight, that really helps. And being able to infuse an element of entertainment in all of that stuff also really helps. So I'll just stop there and say again, entertainment creates value. Supporting some kind of change that your audience is trying to make is a way to deliver value. So that's a bit of an umbrella statement, because you could support their change by educating them, or by showing them how things are done, or by providing examples they can learn from. So some of the things I've already mentioned have the purpose of supporting change. And then there's inspiring change. That's another way that you can create value for someone, is to inspire the possibility of change for them. Creating connection is another thing, and supporting a community is the last thing on my list. And this is by no means an exhaustive list, But it's an attempt to sort of flesh out for you how you might create value. And again, everything that happens to you in your life, in your business, I believe is an opportunity to add value when you are publishing daily. So creating connection and supporting community is kind of, I think for a lot of us, is going to feel like on the real squishy, hard to define end of things. But one of the, Seth Godin has so many clever or memorable ways to say things. And he's said it in the past that one of the things we crave is to feel unalone, I think is how he put it. We want to feel less alone, not alone, unalone. And you have an opportunity to do that. One of the things that I just find remarkable over and over again comes out of the work I do, which is part of it is helping folks do market research, which sounds, pretty dry and boring. But when the market research is done by interviewing people, it's very sort of vibrant and human, or it can be. And one of the things I just get the biggest kick out of is folks who are new to this, they'll sort of, willingly suspend disbelief for a while. They'll trust me and, I'll walk them through the process of reaching out to total strangers. They'll do it. They'll get responses from some of those strangers. And then not 100% of the time, but almost 100% of the time, I'll hear from them. They'll have this particular interview that just blows their mind. And what happens is they're blown away by the generosity and eagerness of the person they are interviewing and that person's willingness to share everything that they know. And the reason that happens is because so many of us feel alone in our work because, nobody else really knows to the depth that we do all this intricate detail about what it is we do. And so some total stranger shows up and says, I am interested in your work and, the parts that are risky or frustrating or keep you up at night. And, people won't literally say this, but they'll react as if, like, thank God you showed up. My friends, my loved ones, they're all sick to death of hearing of this stuff. I have nobody to talk to about this. And, at my job, I'm just the person who does this stuff. I'm not really appreciated for what I know. And you're showing up and with this implicit appreciation for, who I am and what I've learned. And it's just, it kind of flips people's view of things when they finally have that happen in their market research. And they, I'm trying to bring this back to my larger point, which is it helps people, the people that they're reaching out and trying to interview, some of them, it helps them feel less alone. And that's a very powerful, powerful thing because of, us being so-called social animals, just it's part of human nature. We want to, even the introverts in the room, and I'm definitely one of those, we don't want to feel totally alone. We crave certain types of connection. So anyway, that's another way you can create value, is by creating that connection. So value takes many forms. Everything is an opportunity to add value. And so when you're publishing daily, you'll get a lot of those opportunities. And again, the pressure of daily publication, the pressure that that puts on you, hopefully will lead you to be very creative in looking for ways to create value. Because let me tell you, it doesn't matter how much you know, how deep your expertise is. At the daily publication frequency, you will eventually run out of things to talk about if you stick to only one modality. And so when I say one modality, let's say that you think the thing that's going to create the most value for my audience is teaching them how to do something. Okay, wonderful. If you stick to just that one modality, and just remember that list I just went through, you know, insight, showing how something can be done, learning by example, entertainment, supporting change, inspiring change, creating connection, supporting community. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, that's 8 modalities. And you're going to stick to just one of them, you know, showing how something can be done. You will eventually run out of things to say. I don't know how long that'll take. Maybe it'll take years. But you'll eventually run out of things to say, and you'll probably create the situation that you fear daily publication. You'll create the thing you most fear about daily publication, which is a monotonous experience of being on your email list or reading what you publish. And you, I would bet money that you implicitly fear doing that. You're like, if I'm going to publish this much, I don't want to bore people. And if you stick with just one modality of expression in what you publish, you'll probably do that, or you'll be more at risk of doing that. The alternative is to mix it up and to use different modalities of expression, to mix in some entertainment, to mix in some examples, to mix in some inspirational content. I promise you, you can do this and still be taken seriously as a business person, as an expert. It's not common. This is not like the most popular way to do things because, you know, excuse my French, but who the fuck ever taught us to do this in school? Like, we all have to learn this on our own. And the fact that we have to learn it on our own means that not everybody learns how to be an effective communicator. But, you know, being an effective communicator, I think, really does involve having multiple modalities of expression at your disposal. And you won't be equally good at all of them to start with. That is 100% okay. Remember, the Advanced Marketing Coaching Program is hands-on learning. You're going to learn by doing. And one of the aspirations we have is to be gentle with ourselves as we do that, to know that we're not going to get it right the first time, maybe even not the second or fifth or tenth time, but we're going to keep showing up and doing it anyway. We are going to be okay with imperfection. So let me wrap this up by saying, if you are allowing yourself only one modality of expression, then not everything is actually an opportunity. You're limited. You're going to say, if, for example, the only mode of expression you'll allow yourself is showing how something can be done, then not everything is an opportunity. Only things that relate to that mode of expression will seem to be opportunities to you. But if you are more flexible in the modes of expression you use in communicating with your audience, then everything truly can be an opportunity, and you will avoid burning your list out with repetitive content. I guess I'll add one more thing. This is a theory I have. I think that just like there's, these two modes of thinking, I forget what they're called, but, you know, slow and fast thinking. The slow thinking is more sort of high effort. There's a higher cognitive load. And so we're very stingy when it comes to deploying that slow thinking. I think there's sort of two ways that your audience is going to be operating. There are going to be people who know they have a problem, and they're in solution-seeking mode. And then there are going to be everybody else who is going to somehow end up being a part of your audience. So those in solution-seeking mode, I think, operate quite differently. They have a hunger for, well, the solution that they seek. And you might be that. And so the content that you're creating that is very solution focused, very how-to focused, very educational, very instructional, very prescriptive is going to be appealing to these, you know, people who are hungry for a solution. But I wouldn't even hazard a guess as to what percentage of any given email list that's going to be. I just don't know. I just know it's going to be probably a portion of the list. But what about the rest? What about them? I think that's where you have to ask some questions about what kind of change you're trying to create and whether there is a, for some people, perhaps a necessary incubation period around that change. Whether the change is something that requires a new way of seeing things or is a difficult change that requires changing how people behave rather than just deciding to do something different one day. All of those elements play into how you might think about relating to the rest of your list. Those who are not actively, eagerly, urgently seeking a solution, but instead are there for different reasons. Maybe you just ignore them. Maybe you're not there for them. Or maybe you are trying to serve them as well. This is all, of course, very rooted in my own experience. So, you know, the change that I'm trying to help people create is one that is not easy and it takes time. And it's for that reason that I'm so into the idea that I'm going to, language comes from a wonderful client of mine. I'm like, dripping water, wearing away a stone. And that for the kind of change that I'm trying to create, that's a really effective approach, actually. Now, it's not fast. It's not dramatic or you know, splashy or, you know, sexy. It takes time. But I am trying to help people see new opportunities for their career. And time is really an ally in doing that because they may not get it the first time that I say, well, this is the opportunity or this is how you take advantage of the opportunity. But the 10th or 50th time, something clicks maybe. So I guess that's a little bit of a justification for why I'm encouraging more flexibility in your approaches to, you know, the modalities of expression that you would use. I think it's good to be flexible there because you may have a similar situation where the change you're trying to create is a bigger change that just takes more time and it's a more complex change. And those are reasons to earn your audience's attention over a longer period of time. And one of the ways to do that is to be, to have some diversity in what your content looks like. Again, this is all filtered through why are you doing this and what change are you trying to create? Those two questions will help you figure out the rest of how exactly you want to show up for your audience as you're publishing daily. And it may be that those questions lead you to a different place than what I've just described, and that is 100% fine. What's most important is that you do your level best to answer those questions. And, you know, you might be at a phase in things where you can't actually answer those. Your answer is, well, I don't know yet, but I'm going to do this daily publication thing and try to figure it out and sort of write my way into a greater, when I say write, I mean W-R-I-T-E. You know, I'm going to publish my way into greater clarity. And I think that's quite valid. I think that's a great way to go about things. But again, the questions are, you know, why am I doing this and what change am I trying to create? And certainly, you know, who am I trying to create that change for? Because it's not going to be for everybody. Answers to those questions, I think, will shed a lot of light on whether this idea that everything can be an opportunity is relevant for you. I think for a lot of you, it will be. Okay, this has gone on long enough. Hope you found this useful.